Hello, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good night, happy Hanukkah, whenever you're listening to this. Hello and welcome to the next All About Symbian Insight podcast. I'm Ewan Spence and I'm here introducing Insight number 126. So, auspicious occasion, as it is a pentagonal pyramidal number, a decacognal number, and it is also a Harshard number. Now, because this is such a special occasion, one, I get to host, and that means Rafe
is in Silverstone.
Rafe has ran away to Silverstone in the British Grand Prix. It's almost like he knew I was hosting. Anyway, joining me to keep this all together in this very special number, we have Steve. Hello, Steve.
Yes, I was the one who tipped Rafe off. I'm sorry about that.
Yes. I understand you've brought in some reinforcements as well this week.
I have indeed. We have David Gilson, a regular writer on the site. He's been on the podcast before, I believe, as well. So hello, David.
Hello, everybody.
He was on last week, Steve. How is your Alzheimer's doing?
A week is a long time in the mobile world. We also have Mr. Tim Salmon, who's also been on the Insight before, but I don't believe at the same time as you, Ewan. So, Tim Salmon, welcome.
No, I was on at the same time as you and not the same time as Rafe. I've never spoken to Rafe yet, so...
I'll tell you what, since we've got some new faces here, let's do something really, really... No, it's normally quite difficult on the podcast. Let's try and get everybody's favourite quick application in under two sentences each.
Shall I go first?
You might laugh. Yes, go on, you go first.
Okay, my one was Nimbus. I know Nimbus has been around for years, but whenever I pick up a Symbian phone, the first thing I make sure I get on board is Nimbus. And the reason is that the Twitter part of it is getting better and better. And I just looking at yesterday, it seems to have all sorts of different searches. It pulls over the information from your main Twitter account nicely, and you save all the stuff that you've got on your desktop application. It integrates really well. So not only is a Nimbus kind of Skype connect to everyone as a client, but also you get the bonus of the Twitter.
Oh, there's Tim there. Right. Steve, what do you have?
Well, originally you said I wanted a couple of mini reviews rather than favourites, but I do have one favourite and one mini review, so I'll do the review first. I have downloaded Chromatic Tuner from the Ovi store. I'm a bit of a musician in my spare time, and essentially this is a Java application, which takes a while to open up on some Symbian phones, and it's a tiny bit clunky, but it is chromatic, and by chromatic I mean in real time it samples the tones coming into the microphone and then gives a readout of which note it thinks it is and whether it's sharp or flat, and that bit does kind of work, but you have to get pretty close to the microphone. So a kind of qualified thumbs up. I don't believe it's expensive, but that is in the Ovi store for most Symbian phones. And picking up the X6, which Tim has very kindly lent me, they got Sports Tracker loaded. This is the new Sports Tracker, written by Sports Tracking Technologies. And I did their review of their heart rate monitor up on the site last week, so do go and look that up. It works fabulously with the monitor. You pick up the monitor and it's just a little plastic blob, and you strap it to your chest and you think, well, there's no on button. How on earth is this going to work? And it picks it up first time. What happens is the battery inside the monitor basically keeps the circuits ready to go, and the moment you close the circuit by connecting the monitor to this chest strap they provide, it all kicks into action and starts scanning for Bluetooth pairings. You start up the application and bang, you are monitoring your heart rate in real time. So from 2 minutes after unpacking the package, you can be setting off on a run or a walk and watching your heart rate move into the different exercise bands as you go. And I just think that's tremendously useful, and it certainly helped me with my exercise regime. So two apps there, Chromatic Tuner and Sports Tracker.
David, do you have something? Is it exciting and energetic?
Yes, I do. It's a crazy game which I reviewed for Other Gaming a while ago called Farm Frenzy. The game consists of, you have a field which you have to keep watered, you put animals out there who will lay eggs and which you sell, and then you can make cakes, and you get sheep that you shear for wool, and it sounds very silly, but you're having to frantically, on fifth edition phones, frantically tap away on the screen and try and keep up with all these animals plodding around. It's great for a casual play, and it's a lot more fun than playing solitaire. And the reason I'm mentioning it this week is because it's just become available for third edition phones as well. Not quite as fun not being able to tap on the screen, because you're having to kind of say, oh, well, I'll water the field by doing this submenu, but it still works. So that's my mini review for this week.
There we go. And the one I want to pick up is the ever-useful device info. This is a widget that we use quite a lot here, all about Symbian. It simply tells you how much free RAM and how much free disk space you have available on your device. What I love about it is it's very small. It's one single screen. And also, even though it's a widget, which everybody's expecting to be looking at online web pages and stuff, it actually provides quite a deep hook into the device. It also allows us to watch the RAM rapidly decrease on original X6, but now the firmwares are finally updated to V20, and all, even the 32 gigabyte comes with music editions. Insets are quite happy with a fair amount of free memory. Right then, there's your quick applications. If you have your own quick applications that you'd like us to look at in another podcast, then do get in touch with us. Contact details, as always, are back on the website, www.allaboutsymbian.com, and you can reach us with the emails and the Twitters, and we'll give them all in depth at the end of the show. Right then, without mentioning what the news is, Steve, what's your comment on it?
I'm going to mention the news briefly because people may be confused otherwise. NetQuinn, which is another of these mobile security companies, they've issued a press release saying they found some a rogue Trojan application. It's shown as a game by a rogue company whose Symbian certificate has now been revoked by Symbian. Essentially, this Trojan game was uploaded to a few sites, and NetQuinn have put up a press release saying these botnets created by this Trojan are targeting Symbian S63rd and 5th edition operating systems, and our mobile security center estimates 100,000 mobile phones were impacted by them, ! I think the fact that there's an ! At the end of the sentence, it rather gives the game away. This is kind of a PR thing and is not terribly accurate reporting. Basically, what it is, this is a Trojan out there. If you delve into the murkier areas of the internet, you will find all sorts of Trojans for all sorts of mobile platforms. They rarely do that much damage, and they rarely have any reliable way of spreading themselves. They're not really viruses in the true sense of the word. But if you're at all worried, go into Application Manager on your smartphone right now and go to Settings. And in there, there's a line which says Online Certificate Check. And I know for some of the old E-series devices, this defaulted to on, so you don't need to worry. For more recent devices, because that obviously may confuse some newcomers, it gets defaulted to off. If you're at all worried, put Online Certificate Check to on, and then whenever you do download something, even if it's from a slightly non-regular source, it will get that check. And if it comes from this particular company whose certificate has been revoked, then the phone will alert you. But as ever, guys, just stay to safe download sites, stay to the obvious store, safe to download sites recommended by All About Symbian, and you will not hit this problem whatsoever. You have zero chance of being infected, so just don't worry. And don't go buying software by NetQuinn or F-Secure or any of the other security companies. It's certainly for antivirus and firewall. It's just not necessary on Symbian OS.
And in other news, a mobile phone company asks for their hardware back. And David, you are going to return it, aren't you?
I would like to reassure Sony Ericsson, but I returned their Vivas Pro yesterday. If you're listening, it'll be with you by 1 p.m. Friday.
Is it possible you were referring to a different bit of hardware, Ewan?
No. I mean, far be it. I just don't want the Sony Ericsson or any mobile phone lawyers on top of us for holding on to hardware. It's just, no, we don't do that. On with the news. Right then, the Symbian PDK. This is an impressive piece of software. Essentially, this is the reference design of what Symbian Foundation reckons Symbian 3 can look like. It's downloadable. It goes into the SDK. It is still quite a techie and geeky thing, but what it does allow developers and hardware manufacturers to do is put Symbian 3 onto the reference device platform. There's actually a reference phone, this sort of great big bulky thing that doesn't go into the shops, but everybody can use to test out the operating system and the firmwares and such like before they put them into the fancy phones. And Rafe, who is not here, has been looking extensively at the Symbian 3 PDK. And I have to say, it looks very, very impressive. Okay, it's a developer tool. It's still a bit buggy. It still runs a little bit slow, but everything functionally is there. And if people wanted to see what Symbian 3 is going to look like, all they need to do is go out and download it. And of course, with Symbian Foundation being open, this is actually a completely different approach to other mobile companies, where you don't see the operating system until you download the firmware into your phone and you haven't even seen it beforehand because it's been kept under lock and key. This is actually quite an important thing, isn't it, Steve?
Yes, it is. I was quite impressed by the fact that it's got an emulator. I was been very excited from day one in the Symbian world by the fact that you could, even back in the Scion days, there's your few pence in the jar, Ewan, when you could run a virtual Scion or a virtual communicator or a virtual Symbian smartphone on any Windows PC in the world. It really opens things up to everyone in terms of not just developers, but people actually trying things out and experimenting with the interface, which in this case, we haven't got a real Symbian 3 device to play with. One word of warning, even going back to those Scion days, and it's remained the pattern ever since, the emulators, because by definition they're running one operating system effectively, emulated within another, they do tend to need a really fast a PC, so you're not going to run this on your average £400 domestic PC. You will need a serious, presumably a gaming beast with masses of RAM and pretty fast graphics. But from what Rafe's shown, the emulator does have all the basic applications and all the platform functionality. And yes, go download it. Just allow a bit of time for playing around with it and make sure you've got enough RAM, I'd say.
Mm. There's also some great things you can do with emulators. I'm going to stay in the Scion one just for it, because my favourite thing is you take Nokia's netbook, which isn't a netbook, but you all know what I mean. Because that runs Windows 7, you can actually run the original Scion Series 3A emulator on there full screen. So you end up getting an old Scion 20 years later on much better hardware with less battery life. Emulators are quite powerful. They need a lot of whack, and they're never a replacement for the actual hardware. If you're coding something in the emulator, not one of the developers, do try it out on proper hardware first, because there might be some slight subtle changes. I'm going to say with that, though, because one of the interesting things about the PDKs is allowed us to really get to grips with the Symbian 3 UI. And as I commented in an article on Friday, the UI is exactly the same as it has been for 10, 15, 20 years on mobile devices. And Tim, David, I'm going to ask you guys to come in on this one now, because we've always had lots of talk about how, you know, Symbian seems to be losing it, and there's lots of talk online about, you know, the UI is, oh, it just needs changed and completely reworked. My argument is that it isn't. My argument is that it looks exactly the same as your original Palms, your HP 200 LXs, and, you know, your various old Geos communicators and such like. I mean, have you had a chance to have a look at the Symbian 3 screenshots and had a think about the UI at all, either of you guys? Tim?
I haven't had a play with the emulator, certainly, but the thing that annoys me about Symbian phones at the moment is that with the other platforms, and when I say other, I mean Android and iPhone, obviously, you can make widgets for yourself. You can make shortcuts without having to if I want to make a shortcut on one of my pages on my phone, I can not only put it on there and with the other devices and give it an icon and a unique picture, if you like, but also I can name it and put the label underneath it as to what it is. Now, I know that in Symbian you can put shortcuts to web bookmarks wherever you like on the phone, but you can't label it, and it always looks the same. And unless you actually know what it is, you can't actually get to it. And I think that's where the other interfaces, for me, it's the one thing that kind of stands out for me in terms of interfaces, those small things like that Symbian just hasn't quite got there yet, that makes the interface usable and clickable and very, very quick to use and get to places you want to be without any fuss.
Yeah, there's one small footnote to that, Tim, is that if you, with a bit of technical knowledge, and I agree this is a bit of a caveat, you can actually make a WGZ file, a widget file for a particular site with its own icon, with its own label, and it takes only 5 minutes to do, but you do need to have the necessary tool loaded on your PC to make that, so I absolutely accept the criticism, just to note that it is possible if you know what you're doing.
Sure.
Well, we say that, Steve, but I mean the percentage of people who are going to have these smartphones that are going to have the knowledge that they can do that and have the wherewithal and willingness to go out and do it is going to be a fraction of a fraction of 1%.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Like Tim, I mean, I use the facility to put a bookmark to a website on the home screen, the standby icons. I've done that on almost every smartphone in the Symbian world, and that works well. But as Tim says, all the icons look the same, so you have to hover the mouse over it.
And it reminded me very much of the BlackBerry setup, where you've got to go over hover over each one, wait for the label to pop up. So even if the label's there, it's still a kind of kludge to get there.
David, any thoughts from you on this whole question of UI and how it doesn't really need changed, it just needs polished?
Well, it's one of the things that kind of frustrates me when I hear criticism of Symbian, because I agree with Tim about the limitation of what we can do on the Symbian home screens. But once we get into talking about applications, I think all of the mobile operating systems are equivalent. We're just talking about icons that we can scroll through and can put in folders more recently on some operating systems than others. I mean, it would be nice, what Tim was saying, I mean, if I can bring into the operating system, say, okay, I want to shortcut for this web application, this website, and it'll pull down the fav icon and so you can distinguish it. I do predict that Symbian 3 is going to come in for a load more bashing, because from what I've seen on Rafe's videos and other videos floating around the internet of the user interface, it looks, topographically at least, very much like the N97 and N97 Mini and upcoming C6. We're going to have the same icons for applications, and on the home screen we've got the same draggable widgets. That isn't a bad thing, but I think journalists out there are desperate to see something completely different from Nokia. Well, Symbian Foundation, I should say. What I'm hoping will be the saving grace for Symbian 3 is the one-touch operation, because that is something you can't sum up by looking at it. That is going to be a user experience that once people get their hands on these things, they'll say, oh yes, that works rather nicely. So I'm really hoping that'll be the saving grace. Otherwise, I think people won't see enough difference and are going to carry on bashing away at Symbian.
Yeah, I think I agree with David. I think it's unfair that the people would bash Symbian for wanting something different when, if I can just put my cross-platform hat on for a moment, in the iPhone world, for example, recognised worldwide intuitive UI, but there's no home screen. Well, you press the home button, you get basically a page of icons, just like on S60. There's no possibility of widgets or status icons or anything at all, really, anything you can customise, anything presenting information. Android, you get the home screens, multiple home screens full of widgets and information. It's all hunky-dory and wonderful. But then when you actually want to start a programme, you've got this really clunky slide-up pane of applications sorted in alphabetical order. And if you've got 60 apps loaded, you have to manually just go swipe, 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 swipe to get the application starting with the letter Z. And that's just so clunky. So both iPhone and Android fall down horribly in terms of a holistic user interface that works at both levels, at both the home screen level and the application launcher level. At least Symbian, admittedly we've had the single tap, double tap thing, which is where they've really fallen down, plus that and the use of resistive touchscreens. But those aside, the idea of having the main menu of folders of application icons neatly organized and home screen setup, which is configurable, and you can put informational widgets there, you can put shortcut widgets, yeah, and I'm sure they're adding extra widgets for Symbian 3. I absolutely agree with your article on all about Symbian last week, Ewan, that it's not a question of needing a UI, it's a question of just making it consistent, and I thought you were spot on.
So there we go. There, as always, you can leave comments in these articles we talk about, either on the articles themselves or on the show notes of the podcast. Let's stay with UIs very briefly, because Steve, you decided to just throw a little stick into the anthill by going touchscreen phones are absolutely useless and we don't need them.
I wasn't entirely serious. I did say, really? At the start of the article that I was playing devil's advocate. What I'm fed up with is the fact that the tech press has decided that touch is good, non-touch is bad, big screens are good, small screens bad. And I can see some of their reasoning, but that really is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Devices like, for example, the Nokia E71, E72, devices like, for example, the N86, both, you know, relatively small screens, 2.4 and 2.6 inch screens, very much old, quote, old fashioned form factors, but for an awful lot of use cases, and I listed some of them in the article there, they're actually a lot more functional, a lot more usable than these much vaunted high specification, high expense, high everything else, big touchscreens tablets. So, as ever, somebody mentioned in one of the comments to the article, diversity is everything, and even the tech media, even the US-based tech media, should just take a back step and think, okay, there is a wider world out there than not just the US. There's a wider world out there in terms of form factor, and all these different, you know, clamshells and hybrids and front-facing QWERTYs and numeric keypaded phones, they are all equally valid phone form factors for particular use cases. And I just wanted to highlight what I see as kind of a something that's not being championed at the moment.
I wonder if that's driven more because that's where they think those phones are going, or because the people who have those sort of phones are the ones who are clicking on all their adverts and giving them money for the site. Far from me to be cynical on that one. Who laughed? Right, David, I'm going to come to you in a second because there seems to be quite a little bit, lots of little bits of browser news coming out this week. I know we talked about Skyfire in a previous show and the fact that their servers are switching down in quite a few countries. Interesting to see it still being recommended in the Office store to me. There we go. The one I picked up this week was the Silverlight plugin for the built-in Nokia browser on S60. Now, Silverlight is another one of these rich multimedia runtimes for web browsers. It's a bit like Flash. It's Microsoft's own standard. You put this in and you can have lots of whizzy things, and you can have videos playing and audio doing and slide transitions and stuff. HTML5 is another one of the options that can be done to do this. What's nice to see this year is, again, it's starting to build up that idea again of cross-platform compatibility. Pop in the Silverlight and you can go to any of the Silverlight enabled websites. Now, yes, you are running on a phone that has significantly less CPU and RAM overhead than a desk-bound PC, but you are still able to do that. And it also provides developers with another option if they want to do a small screen version of their website. The example Microsoft will pop up is their own search engine, Bing. It also supplies weather, news, sports, and such like. It's a nice little plugin. It does work. The only thing that got me, of course, is that I'm a heavy user of Opera Mini, and it's not available in Opera Mini or in Opera Mobile either. But it is a good start. It will address, probably, I suspect, the majority of people who are browsing on an S60-based device. And nice to see it. Speaking of browsers, David, I know you had a look at the Bolt web browser, and all is not perfect in this browser, unlike others, is it?
No, although I'll start by trying to sell Bolt, just to be fair. What Bolt offers is it's a Java browser which will work on any platform, and they seek to bring you a desktop browsing experience on your phone screen with support for embedded video from YouTube, BBC News, and others, and they'll even support HTML5 video on any web page. So, sounds good. Okay, I'll just go through some of the problems I had with it. The desktop browsing experience on a mobile phone screen is... it sounds good, but it's a bad idea. It's too much to fit in the screen, and I actually found with Bolt that the fonts were very low quality, and you're going to have to do lots of sideways scrolling, because even though it's a proxy-based browser, they don't reflow the text as with Opera. The user interface is quite unintuitive. I will say for the record now, I said in my review that you could highlight text, but there wasn't any way to copy and paste. I've since found that you can, but it is a very unintuitive way how to do it. And there's no way to import or export bookmarks, so it's hard to see really what the killer application of Bolt is, what the benefit is. I think it might be better for other like proprietary phone platforms that don't have a powerful browser. I do have some friends using Toco Lights who swear by Bolt, but I think for S60 users there's better options out there.
Yeah, one slight correction, or just a comment to Ewan and David, talking about Skyfire there. And the reason it's still highlighted in the Ovi store for us here in the UK is that it's still fully supported in the UK, the old version of Skyfire. I believe it's the UK, US, and one other, which is possibly Canada. I have to look it up. But for the rest of the world, the old version of Skyfire is now being deprecated and is no longer supported and shouldn't appear in the Ovi store for those countries. It is worth noting that we often say, oh, look at so-and-so in the Ovi store, when in actual fact the contents of the Ovi store, just like contents of app stores for other platforms around the world, varies hugely from region to region. And certainly if you go to somewhere like, I'm guessing if you go to the Chinese Ovi app store for the Chinese phone Nokia, you're not going to see an awful lot. So that we have to do bear this in mind when we do reviews and do commentaries, that things change from region to region.
Well, there we go. Things have taken time to come through. And interestingly, Nokia was at the end of this one, was the next version of Skype, version 1.1, announced a couple of weeks ago for the Sony Ericsson platform, now available for the 5th and 3rd editions on S60, but on the Nokia ones. I know that the i8-7765-3694 owners, or whatever number that phone is, they're going, oh, it's not ready for us yet. I'm sure Skype are working on it as well. Again, it's it's a big application in terms of what it asks for from the phone in terms of processor and RAM specifications. But it does give you voice over IP. It does give you RIM. And unlike Nimbus, which Tim recommended at the top of the show, it will allow you to do those multiple chat conversations. So you can have three or four people in one group IM conversation. The Skype's native client will actually allow you to do that. I know Nimbus has a little bit of a problem with that. As always with these applications, especially when you're using VoIP services, be very, very careful if you're on a 3G connection, because it will suck down data like a banshee in the next Indiana Jones film. But other than that, again, nice, solid application. Good to see the basic stuff coming out.
And it's worth noting, you said it has heavy RAM requirements. I mean, I think it's around 10 megabytes now, and I did comment the news story that this was reduced from the previous version. We're both embarrassed to say that both of us had upgraded before we'd had a chance to check what it used to be, so we don't actually know how far it's come down. But all I know is that on the previous version, then you'd launch Skype and then perhaps load up Ovi Maps or something heavy, and Skype would then close down, completely obviating the point of having Skype as a messaging client that people can contact you on, running all the time. But at least with 10 megabytes, and also with the new firmware on some of these Nokia phones, even on the N97 now, you can have Skype running and generally get away with it running all the time and not being closed down. So good on Skype.
Indeed. Right. Steve, one article that I know you would have got your teeth into was the Nokia Conversations piece on the N8 and the new camera that's going on there. Obviously, they're pushing this camera and the specs quite heavily, and they've went into a huge amount of technical depth in there. Any chance you could sum it up so I could understand it?
Yes. If you've looked at images taken on any Nokia phone, in fact, probably any camera phone over the last 5 years, you'll notice that there's a certain amount of jaggedness to the images. Now, what I mean by that is, if you take a photo, even in good light conditions, it looks fine. You then zoom in, you zoom into one-to-one pixel levels, so you can actually see the pixels and see the raw capture. And you notice that everything looks rather processed and edge enhanced, and indeed it has been. What they do in software is they take the raw image, then they apply a filter that removes the digital noise, the speckles, and then they apply another feature which adds detail back in by edge enhancing, so looking at areas of color where the areas change color, and putting an artificial edge there, sometimes as much as a black band, so almost creating like a child's outline where the child might color in between the painting by numbers. So it puts in detail that isn't there in the first place. Now, if you stand back from an edge-enhanced picture, it looks much sharper, much crisper. You think, wow, that looks. I can see everything in the picture. But you can't. You're actually seeing detail that's been artificially put there. And what Nokia have been saying with their N8 camera, Damien Dinning posting, as you say, on Nokia Conversations, he's saying that with the N8, they decided to throw out the rule book, and unlike every other camera phone of the last 5 years, they're going for more or less zero edge enhancement. They're actually producing images exactly as they are captured. They reckon their sensor is now big enough and sensitive enough, and the optics are now good enough that they can produce a natural photo and not have to enhance it whatsoever. That's their claim. They've put up some really impressive examples on the Nokia Conversations blog. There was a butterfly, which has been widely copied around, which is just stunning. I was trying to do a similar one with a dragonfly this morning in the garden with my N86, but the wretched dragonfly wouldn't stay still. I suspect Damien caught it. His butterfly was actually perched on a leaf, and he had a static subject, so kudos there.
It was dead.
Dead, yeah. So that's the claim, really, that they're going for a very natural look by not applying extra filters. And I have to say, from the sample so far, I think it looks absolutely terrific. And as they have been claiming all along, it really can replace a point-and-shoot camera. So roll on N8.
Let me throw this one at you, Steve, because I had a review of the Canon S90 PowerShot, which is an advanced point-and-click camera. It sort of sits between the point-and-clicks and the digital SLRs. And it had the facility to save not only a JPEG of the picture that it had taken, but also the raw file format. Do you think that if Nokia are really going for the photographers, they dump a raw file image there in there as well?
Yeah, this has actually been asked, and Damien has responded and said that at the moment, I mean, they're considering that. That is something that is technically possible, but I think that would also confuse users who are wondering what on earth a raw image. If you're just an average, camera phone fan, you buy it in the high street, you're not going to know what to do with a raw image, a dot, dot, RAW image. And also the files themselves would be absolutely huge and would start eating people's memory cards far too fast. So there are two fairly good reasons there. I suspect if it does appear, it'll appear as an option and you'll be able to turn it on as an advanced user, and that may come in a firmware update. But I wouldn't hold my breath, to be honest.
Now, that's what actually what the Canon does, but it does the JPEG and the RAW of the same image. So it saves two pictures for each picture, as it were. David, I know that you were quite impressed with the Vivas camera stuff. Anything that you think that they could learn from this blog post?
Well, I'm interested that they might have already had a crack at it themselves, and I just wanted to compare notes with Steve's. When I was taking pictures with the Vivas Pro, I noticed that their approach to dealing with edges was that the edges were like very fuzzy, and it kind of looked like someone had like deliberately exchanged colour pixels from each side around each edge. And I just wonder what Steve thought to the original Vivas edge detection in relation to how the N8 does.
Yes, it was much the same on the original Vivas, David. What you're seeing there, where pixels are literally almost swapping sides of a line, and they look rather jumbled when you zoom in that far, what's happening is that there's just so much edge enhancement, so much processing going on, that you're not only adding detail that wasn't there, you're actually confusing detail and confusing colours. And just a sample that the Vivas' camera has some way to go. With the N8, we're basically saying that the camera is so good, it doesn't need any of that. And as a result, you won't get confusion, you won't get artificial detail. There was a wonderful sample image put up by Damien of a beach scene, and showing the taken with a traditional camera phone and taken with the N8. And the N8 just shows the lake as kind of a blue smudge, really, in the distance. And they think, that's fine. Then you look at the one taken by the traditional camera phone, and there's sort of, you can almost make out detail like waves and crests and detail, and they say, well, that looks much better than the N8. He said, no, in the original scene there wasn't any of that. It was a flat surface. It was that you couldn't see detail on the lake. That is artificial detail being added in by the camera phone, desperate to pick out detail, desperate to pick out edges, and it's all artificial. I think that rather demonstrated it.
Oh, I think if I can just chip in there and move back slightly to the RAW argument that was raised by Ewan. I think the issue, I've got a friend that's really into photography, and he thinks that RAW is the best thing since sliced bread. When he shows me the differences between the two, it seems meaningless to me. And for the average user on the street, you've got to be seriously into photography and want to do some special things with your photographs in order to appreciate the difference between a fine JPEG and a RAW image. I'm sorry, but I think that most people that are going to be looking at buying a camera phone are not going to be the kind of people that are going to be expecting that kind of performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Also worth noting that the JPEGs from something like the N8 without all the extra post-processing, without the edge enhancement, the JPEGs will actually be smaller, because all those little edges and bits of detail that the cameras try to bring out which aren't there, they all add complexity to the image, which means that the final compressed JPEG is bigger. So the N8 has the special advantage of not only producing more natural images, the files it produces will actually be smaller in terms of per megapixel than with the other camera phones. So, yep, I cannot wait. I really wish Nokia would pull their finger out and get me an N8 ASAP. Oh, look, there's a DHL van pulling up outside.
Yes, and out of it pours the Russian mafia. Right then, so there we go. Two hosts down, one left to go, so I'm still here. Thank you all very much for listening to the show. Thank you also to our guest commentators, Tim Salmon.
Thank you.
And David Gilson.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Next week, can we have Gibson Lee Paul, who make guitars, and Captain Haddock from Tintin, just so we can have the thematic names. Steve, if he's resuscitated himself from his concrete overcoat, will hopefully be with us as well.
Yes, goodbye for now. Maybe you could just close with a confirmation of our Twitter handles if people want to follow us, Ewan.
Oh, I could.
You don't know them, do you? Okay, Steve, Steve Litchfield, David Gilson, Tim Salmon, all as they sound, and Ewan for your good self, of course.
Yes, and Ewan Spence works as well. There's just a great big sign that says, "Oi, I've moved." Yes, this is your All About Symbian Insight podcast number 126. Rafe, of course, is celebrating another 126, the Ferrari 126C, which is on display at Silverstone. And Steve, you know what that is, don't you?
Is that the one with the front wing that's higher up?
No, it was Ferrari's first turbo-engined Formula One car.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So there we go. That's what Rafe learned today. Last half hour, that's what you learned today. And next week, hopefully, you'll learn something else and have a bit of fun and chat as well. But for now, thank you all very much for listening, and goodbye.